Welcome to Baiterson. We make up stories improvised and recorded live. We start each story by choosing a random phrase from a source of text. My name is Casey, and my source is the September 2025 edition of Centrum Magazine, Creativity in Community.
My name is Ben, and my source is The Feynman Lectures on Physics by Richard Feynman.
My name is Drew, and my source is The Gulag Archipelago 3 by Alexander Solzhenitsyn.
My name is Mike, and my source is A Beautiful Chaos Demands Energy, Poems by Kevin Murphy.
We will now choose a performer at random, and that performer is...
Drew. That's me. Flipping to a random page. And this time we slept the whole day through.
And this time we slept the whole day through. The following is an improvised story on that theme. And this time we slept the whole day through. It was hot. He was on like the 18th floor of a very tall building. Mosquitoes, humidity, unpleasant sleeping situation.
The air conditioning was out, so all the windows were open. He had a fan going, but it wasn't doing much good.
His sister was in the bed next to him, and she was sound asleep. She didn't have trouble sleeping typically.
She was under a blanket. She somehow could manage these extreme air temperatures without having too much trouble. He didn't understand it.
He worried about her sometimes. She had a lot of quirks, like never seemed to care if she had a coat on in the summer or was underdressed in the winter. She didn't always eat in a predictable fashion. Her sleeping schedule, even though she was good at sleeping, it was really erratic.
He worried about her a lot. He spent most of his free mental energy worrying about his sister, Shanice.
This was what was keeping him up, was worry. Worry about
mixed with heat. Worry plus heat
plus mosquitoes.
Plus mosquitoes.
He would go back and forth thinking, I should just get under the blanket and stop getting bit, but then I'd be too hot. The hours ticked on. He had an old clock next to his bed that just
he kept thinking to himself, why do I have this stupid clock ticking all the time? Like, I could get a digital clock. I could use a phone. What is the point? Why do I do this to myself?
But he loved that clock. It was a clock that his mom had given him and Shanice. They each got the same clock on their sixth birthday. They often got the same gifts. They were dressed up the same. You know, being twins meant that sometimes you didn't feel like an individual because people naturally did the same things to you, treated you the same way, grouped you together.
They used to wind their clocks together and synchronize it so the ticks would be at the exact same time, but Shanice had stopped winding her clock.
It was another one of the kind of odd things about her. He first just thought, that's not a big deal. She just isn't interested in it anymore, but she kept the clock. He kept the clock on the dresser on his side of the bed, and she kept the clock on her side of the bed.
She can see me winding it, he thought. Well, why doesn't she? Wouldn't I would think if I saw her winding her clock, I would think I should wind my clock and we could synchronize them again. And this is another thing that he worried about as the hours rolled over till 3 a.m.
It mattered to him because over the years, fewer and fewer things were theirs together. They didn't dress alike anymore. They were in their 20s. They didn't watch the same shows, or at least didn't both enjoy it if they were watching the same show. They just didn't do the same thing anymore.
Except sleep in the same bed. That was the only thing that was a vestige from their childhood. And
their mom died a couple years ago. And, you know, it was a painful process. They had cremated her and tossed her ashes into the river. And for some reason, the management company of this apartment building just like hadn't noticed that nobody was paying the rent the whole time. And they kept waiting for someone to tell them they had to go somewhere or knock on the door and evict them or turn the electricity off or something. And just nothing happened. They just kind of kept going. They knew someday somebody would figure it out and they'd be evicted and or the water would get shut off. But
and they They stayed there out of necessity because they didn't have anywhere else to go. And they barely had, they had a really hard time making money. Shanice only worked on and off. And they stayed in this apartment and they stayed, you know, kept sleeping in the same bed because they really didn't have any other options. You know, the apartment was small. There wasn't a lot of living space and it barely fit the bed as it was.
Shanice woke up and said, "I can't sleep." And Alex said, "What do you mean? You were just sleeping for like 2 hours." And she said, "Well, I can't sleep now." And she got up and left the bedroom and walked right past him in the doorway and went into the bathroom and just sat on the toilet without, like, not going to the bathroom, just like went to go to a different room than he was in, is how he interpreted it. He's like, "You can't even stand to be with me anymore." And she's like, "Nah, man, it's just cooler in here." But then she shut the door. And it just like, and he felt like a knife in his heart. They don't wind the clocks together. They don't even talk together. She doesn't want anything to do with him. And all he does is worry about her.
He got up after about 10 minutes lying in the bed. And just stood outside the door and listened just to see if she would ask, like, "Hey, what do you want?" And then finally he said, "I'm going for a walk, Shay."
And she said,
she didn't say anything. So he left and it was cooler outside. You know, their apartment just sort of baked them in there. It was still hot outside. It was daytime, but, you could feel the air moving. Your mind could break out of the walls of the apartment. So it was a little more relaxing. It was a good move to go for a walk. He was feeling better within about two blocks.
And he
looking at other people, thinking about their lives.
He brought his keys and he brought his wallet and he figured he had to be at work early. So he decided he would just take what he needed. He made a sandwich before he left and he brought a little paper bag lunch with him. And he figured that once the buses started running, he would take the regular bus number 9 out to the stop at Hex Bay, where he would start his shift as a toll booth collector.
Shanice sat in the bathroom with the bright white fluorescent lights on against the cool porcelain, just kind of cooling down. And just stared at the geometric patterns in the tile for a long time. And she thought deep and long. She'd had a dream about leaving the apartment. In the dream, they'd had a terrible fight. And they were both mad at each other, and they were both leaving the apartment for some reason.
And
in the dream, they were kind of dividing the stuff up and throwing it in bags and yelling at each other and just kind of setting out. In the dream, the apartment was on the ground floor and they were just walking out the front door. And she sat there.
She couldn't remember what, you know, was making them leave. She was trying to recall this dream. It was more of a feeling. She couldn't draw an image. She's pretty sure that they never saw it, but it was a feeling of running away from something. And then she realized dragon. They were running away from a dragon.
And that was kind of all she needed.
Alex took the bus, worked a shift, came home. It was much cooler now. So he took a lazy walk home, put his key in the door, or went up to the 18th floor, went inside and said, "Hey, Shay, I'm home." Didn't hear anything, didn't expect to. Dropped his keys on the counter, plopped on the couch. Actually had this funny idea that she might still be in the bathroom. You know, that's the last place he saw her. So he got back up. Bathroom door was open. She wasn't there. He looked around the apartment.
He realized that he had got some ice cream for them. He splurged on some ice cream on the way home. So he got a little pint of ice cream, and he realized he'd left it on the counter. So he went back into the kitchen. And he opened it up to put it in the freezer, and he just stopped dead in his tracks, because in the freezer, when their mom had died, she had left each of them $500. And it was in this these neatly banded together stacks, two $500 stacks. And they had agreed they were always going to hang on to this money until they were ready to take the next step. And for a few years, they hadn't been able to figure out what the next step was. And when he opened the freezer, one of the stacks of $500 was gone. Her stack was gone, and his was still in there.
And he barked, "Shay," and waited. And then he slammed the freezer shut, and he ran over all the apartment. He like looked under the bed. He looked in the closet. He looked in places she would not be. And she wasn't anywhere.
Most of the things were there, but he noticed that her clock was gone as well. And that made him almost more sad than the money.
And if he had been worried before, day to day, about his sister, what he felt now could only be called panic. As he loved her, she was mostly capable, but she had these quirks. They called them quirks. Someone else would probably call them, would diagnose them. And man, he would trust her in almost any situation as long as he were there. But out on her own with $500 and a clock, he actually put his hands to his head and sat down on the bed, and like a, you know, someone's doodle of worried person.
He noticed on the end table next to his bed, the particle board frayed end table, there was the little note that in his haste of looking for Shanice he had overlooked. And he grabbed it and opened it up, and it said, "Alex, I'm going to be okay. This is for the best. I love you. Shay."
And he was devastated and didn't know what to do, laid back on the bed and just started to rack his brains. Where could she possibly have gone? They'd been together their whole life. Still in the few years since their mom had been gone, they, other than when they went to work, they were around each other all the time. He just couldn't, he just was sort of cycling through everything he could think of to try to figure out where she might be.
He hadn't felt this sort of bereft sense of loneliness since his mom had died. And he came up empty. He didn't have a guess. There was no formula that he could apply from his past experience about where she would go when she left the apartment.
He'd never
All he had was bad ideas, and so he went to those. He followed them. She's not at the place where she's not at the hospital where mom died, but that's the only place I'm thinking of, so I'm going to go there. And sure enough, she wasn't there. And she's not back at work, where she sometimes, you know, has lunch with me at the toll booth, but he went there anyway. And then he found himself at the police station, which is a place he really didn't want to go, but he didn't know what else to do. He came in, said, "I want to report a missing person." They told him it wasn't soon enough.
It was too soon.
It was too soon. You need to report a missing person within the first 5 minutes, or else there's no hope in this city. No, it was too soon. A person, especially an adult, isn't missing until it's 36 hours. And
it doesn't sound like she's missing anyway. She wrote a note and left, and, you know, she's not diagnosed with any particular mental illness, and she's not, you don't have reason to believe that she's suicidal. I mean, there was no real angle for the police to treat her as a lost person. She's
plenty of money. She knows what time it is.
But she doesn't. That's
He started to say that and realized how kind of asinine it sounded, but so he let it go.
The social worker who was talking to him mentioned in an offhand way, "You seem like you're really worried. You seem like you worry about a lot of things." And that hit Alex pretty hard. He stopped. He thought to himself about that for a second.
And
he said, is there something wrong with that? And the social worker said,
No.
I guess that's kind of, yeah. No. I mean, do you think it is? And Alex didn't say anything, but he thought about it. Is there something wrong with how much I worry?
He went down to Hex Bay, where he sometimes strolled after work. There was sort of a gravelly beach, and he was watching the sunset and kind of throwing rocks into the water and kicking rocks around and just thinking about his life and thinking about his mom and his sister and everything that had happened, and felt a kind of odd sense of peace start to come over him, like an acceptance of the situation.
He realized that as much as he was worried about where Shanice was and what was going on with her, the words of the social worker just kind of kept echoing in his head, you know, about all of her questions about worry. And he really felt like, why am I so worried? You know, all of our time together, Shanice is actually the one who was taking care of him when he was having a hard time. She was the one who was more adventurous when they were kids. She would take him out into the woods. She would protect him when other kids would try to bully him. And he realized that maybe her departure hadn't affected him because he was worried about her, but he was maybe more worried about himself and how he might get by without her.
Just down the beach, two young kids, a boy and a girl, came kind of running down, and they were laughing, and they were running right towards the water, and they were kind of like ripping their shirts and pants off as they were coming up to the water. And the water in Hex Bay was very cold. Nobody swam in Hex Bay, and even in the midst of summer. And they kind of just laughed, and you could tell they were giggling and bubbling with excitement. And he watched these kids.
He jumped to his feet like he wanted to stop them because he was afraid. He was about to say he's too cold, or, you know, what about a riptide? But all he did was stand up. They were too far away. He didn't think they'd hear him, so he didn't say anything. And they just watched him. Yeah,
and they just watched.
Got into the surf, and they were. They continued laughing. They were splashing each other. One of them, he could hear one of them say, "Oh my God!" and like clutching, like the sister was holding herself like it was so cold, but she was laughing, and the brother would just like did a backwards backflop and made a big splash, and his feet went in the air,
and he suddenly had the urge to throw something into the water, and he looked around for a rock or something like that, and there were plenty, but that didn't feel quite right. So he dug in his pocket and he pulled out the little clock that he kept by his bedside. And it had wound down.
In an irrational moment when he was going to the police station, he grabbed the clock because he thought, oh, I'll show them this and say, like, she's carrying a clock
she's that carrying
looks
one
just
of these.
Like this. Like, as if that would be a really helpful thing to identify her with. And he realized he still had it in his pocket.
And he had this impulse to throw it into the water. And there was this war inside of him as he looked at it. It was his symbol of his sister. It was his most special thing. It was something he'd had since childhood. And so instead of throwing it, he just started to wind it up and wind it and wind it. And the spring got tighter and tighter until he hit the end and he couldn't wind it anymore. And he just let it tick down a couple times. Then he would wind it up again. And he could feel the tension in his shoulders kind of build as he was winding it.
And he gave it a couple more winds, and with a snap, the hairspring and the clock broke, and the ticking stopped.
And at that very moment, he felt his shoulders just drop, and he felt his whole body relax, and he felt like he could take a deep breath, deeper than any breath he'd ever had before, the deepest breath he could ever remember taking.
And he rested the clock on the bench he'd been sitting at and walked home and fell asleep. He slept all through the next day, as hot as it was and as many bugs were buzzing around. And he had a feeling that Shanice did too.
The end.
The end.
Thank you. Betters Than Stories are improvised and recorded live over the internet. We clean up the audio, but we don't edit, rehearse, or redo any content, for better or worse. Subscribe and find other stuff we do at Betterson.com. And remember, if you tell a story, nobody can hurt you.